What does it take to get from Australia to the NFL? More than you think. We learn the story of Georgia Tech defensive lineman Adam Gotsis, who hopes to hear his name called in the upcoming NFL draft. We also meet the man responsible for getting Gotsis to play football on an entirely new continent. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravoo. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for the NFL draft. Today, we're going to tell a story, though, on Railbird Central about how a player gets from halfway around the world to play professional football. Adam Gotsis is a defensive lineman from Georgia Tech that's very likely going to get drafted sometime this weekend. Probably not in the first round, but a likely mid-round draft choice. Gotsis, however, is from Australia, and I have a very personal connection to the game of American football in this foreign country. When I was a college student, I spent a semester studying abroad, attending the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia. And to my surprise, they sponsored an American football team, a club team in essence, made up of not only students but adults from the community at large. I joined the team and played one very memorable season, making friends along the way. And I don't mean to intimate that I was a good football player by any means. If I was any good, I would have been playing college football. But I was a passable high school player with a passion for the game, which allowed me to start at safety for UTS, one of the few positions where someone that's 5'8" and 160-some pounds could play and not be a liability, as long as you're willing to tackle. What's interesting is that my coach in Australia actually was a key figure in getting Adam Gotsis to the United States to play college football. But before we get into that, let's first get to know Adam. I have here his meeting with the media at the NFL Combine, starting with him stating his case and describing what he brings to the table.
Expert interview.
I definitely just think my athletic ability, my shit, you know, I'm a guy that I'm in a DN's body, but I can play inside. You know, I'm 290 pounds at the moment, and I feel like I could get to 310 and still be the same player that I am, a guy that can run sideline to sideline all day. I think that just shows, and then being that versatile guy where you're not stuck at one position, being able to play anywhere across the front, lateral movement, being able to get in the backfield and make plays and not just being a run-stopping guy. So,
any interesting questions coming to you about your background from these NFL teams?
Not really. I feel like it's so foreign. They ask a little bit of how was life and kind of the structure of the football that I played back there and things like that. But it's hard to explain as well, because unless you see it and you know you're there in Australia, where we were playing literally on a roped off field, so it's just like rope around there, and you know only the players and stuff can be in there, and you've got players from other teams that are umpiring the games, so it's like
a little different transition, yeah, to, you know, 70,000 people in the
city. Yeah, it's a bit different, but I mean, I love it, so.
So they're not digging that deep? They're more concerned about your last year or something?
Yeah, like yeah, and I mean, they like a bit of background, but it's more just shows, you know, I think, how much hard work it actually took to come over here. I think that shows, you know, I was really committed to do something big, and I mean, I left my whole family and came to college for 4 years. You know, my family didn't move over here with me, I was here by myself, so. You know, it just shows the maturity that I have and the development of me as a person.
How does your family watch you play?
So a lot of our game, it's about 15 hours ahead, Australian time. So they have to get up sometimes like 4 a.m. in the morning, 3 a.m. in the morning to watch our games. But if it's not on ESPN, then they just have to stream it online. So they have to find like a web link and watch it online. So, I mean, I commend them for that. But I just tell them sleep in and just record it, you know, or just watch it when it comes on TV. I mean, it's... But they don't want to look on social media and see the scores. They want to watch me play. But
it's easy to say that to mom.
Easy to say, yeah. Yeah, they don't want to listen. But they actually came over and spent a bit of time with me, you know, this last season. They were actually all living with me, so... I had my whole family there living in my apartment with me, so it was pretty cool.
Is that fun to have a little home cooking?
It was, yeah. I had my sisters, and they cooked a bunch for me. I mean, they know how to cook real well.
Anything special that they would cook up for you from home?
They cook a lot of Greek food, so my heritage is Greek, and you know, my grandma lives across the street from me, and my aunt lives next door to me, so they're always spending time there and learn how to cook, and you know, it was pretty good having some good home cooking. So beats dining hall food.
Yeah. Who's your agent?
Pat Dye with Sports Trust.
And what was your biggest adjustment to Atlanta?
Probably just that, being in the South. You know, I grew up as a city boy in Australia, so being in the city wasn't a big thing for me. I felt comfortable in there. It's, you know, fast paced, everything's moving. But just being in Atlanta, it's just a whole different, you know, demographic. I mean, you've got guys from like the deep South that are like redneck guys, and then you've got, you know, guys that, you know, grow up in Atlanta. I'm just like, this is, I've never seen it. Yeah, it's crazy. It's just a whole different, you know, group of people. But that's the thing about football, it brings people from all different, you know, cultures and families, and brings you together, and you've got to unite and become one big family. So that's why I love the sport. You know, you do it for the guy to your left and your right every day. So
Do you have your list of teams yet, and have you the Falcons on your list of teams?
I haven't looked yet. So but hey, if they are, I'll enjoy that, because I mean, won't have to move far, and you know, it's pretty comfortable, and you know, I'm a big Falcons fan, so I enjoy them. So
when you started getting into football, was there a particular team or players that you really like to follow?
I think when I started like just getting into football, it was like kind of like the Tom Brady era, so I was a bit of a Pats fan. I was a big fan of Sean Alexander with the Seahawks, but then I kind of just like started following players instead. I think that's what most guys do. They just like start, because you have a greater understanding of the game. It's instead of watching the ball, you're actually watching players. So I mean, I just like watching guys go out there and ball out. That's a big thing. So
what's it like to be an 18-year-old kid moving, I mean, not across the country like a lot of college guys do, but I mean, I can't imagine doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was pretty mature for my age, and then just realizing that I was coming over here to do something. I wasn't just going to college just to go to college. I was coming over here that's a stepping stone to get to where your dream is. And you got to go there and do the best there to get a chance. And, you know, I went to college. I graduated in 3 years. And then now I'm here at the Scouting Combine. So, you know, I got the best out of the academic side and the athletic side, and that was a big thing. That was, like, definitely my mindset was handle your academics, and then you can do what you want with the athletics.
What did you major in?
I was business management and operations. So.
Did you come here with the NFL in mind, or did you come here for the education? What was the thinking long term?
So my whole thing was, I'm going to come to college because I want to get to the NFL. But in selecting college, I wanted to get the best academics I could. And I think, you know, going to Georgia Tech was a great choice. It's a great university, and, you know, it really develops you into a person. It makes you become a man real quick, because you don't have anyone babying you there, and it's you got to handle your study load and then handle your business on the field. So, you know, I couldn't have made a better decision.
And do you feel any more responsibility as a non-specialist? You know, an Australian player playing on the defensive line is a bit of a rarity. Do you think you've got an opportunity to maybe be a trailblazer in that sense?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was Jesse Williams. He played at Alabama, and, you know, he went up to the Seahawks, and he was kind of a trailblazer for me. I saw the things he did, and, you know, it's just a great opportunity to play another position other than kick. But hey, if they want me to punt the ball, I'll punt the ball. I can do it. I can do it now. But if they want me to, I'll do it. But it's just awesome. The awesome opportunity.
That's Adam Gotsis, a defensive lineman from Georgia Tech. After the interview, I talked to Adam privately, wanting to quiz him a little bit deeper about football in Australia. It was here that I learned that our mutual acquaintance, Paul Manera, actually helped Adam get to the USA to play college football. Paul Manera was more or less in Adam's shoes some 20 years earlier, an Australian looking to play American football. Paul would go on to play at the University of Hawaii, kind of appropriate seeing as it's closer in proximity to Australia than any other college football team. And after a stint in coaching football, including the Australian national team, Paul now helps kids in Australia get to the United States to play not only college football, but other sports too. Just briefly, I talked to Adam Gotsis about Paul Manera and what he did for him.
Well, he actually, he wanted me to play offensive line.
Yeah.
So he was trying to get me recruited as offensive tackle, but just his passion for the game, and I just saw the type of person he was, and you know, that really motivated me to just work hard, and I, you know, in my decision in choosing Tech was because I saw the man he is today, and I know when you're at college, you're going to develop into the man you are. And Coach Johnson was his coach, so I was like, I couldn't be under a better coach than Coach Johnson.
That leads us to an interview with Paul Manera, and it's here where you'll really learn how someone on another continent gets to the United States to make a dream come true. Paul was my coach at the University of Technology, Sydney, and now more than a decade later, I reached back out to him to ask him about Adam Gotsis. Right now, we're talking to Paul Manera of Bring It On Sports in Sydney, Australia. Paul, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And we're going to talk about Adam Gotsis here in a second. And I think it's important to understand your background before we get into Adam. Can you tell me an introduction, your introduction to American football in a country where sports like rugby and Aussie rules football dominate?
Well, I guess it all started way back when I was around 13 years of age. I started in Australia. They started showing the NFL playoffs for the first time back in 1980. And that was the year when the Oakland Raiders won the 1981 Super Bowl. So I was actually on school vacation, if you know what I mean, because that's when we have our break. So I was staying up late at night and happened to catch a game of American football, and I was lucky enough that there was a commentator there that showed me explained the rules of the game, and then I just kind of fell in love with the sport and started watching the playoffs every year from 1980, and then after the 1984 Super Bowl when the Oakland Raiders beat the Redskins, some people put an advertisement in the paper saying that they were starting up American football in Australia, and this was in Sydney. And whoever's interested, they said, you know, that there was a central meeting spot, which was called Parramatta Park, and about 300 people from Sydney turned up, and they put us into seven teams, and we started playing American football without pads and helmets. So that's how I got involved in the sport.
So now, of course, you played at the University of Hawaii. Tell me the path that it took to get there from the time you started playing football.
Yeah, well, we some coaches came out from the University of Hawaii to do some clinics. And when they were out there doing those clinics, I met with them and I asked them about playing in America. And, you know, they didn't offer me a scholarship or anything. So I figured that, you know, maybe junior college was the way to go. So the coaches basically recommended that I go to a junior college and see how I go there. So I ended up at Mississippi in a junior college called Itawamba Community College in Fulton, Mississippi. And I went there in 1987. I didn't play until 1988, so I redshirted at the junior college and then played in 1988, my first season as an offensive tackle, and got an honorable mention for All-State. And then I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to the University of Hawaii from there. Then I went to the University of Hawaii. From 1989 to 1992, I played three seasons there and was a three-year letterman. You know, the first year I lettered just on, you know, special teams. But then my junior and senior year was able to earn a starting position and played as a starter and went to the Aloha Bowl in 1989, played against Michigan State. And so ended up with a Bachelor of Business Administration degree in finance, and was also became an academic all-conference player in my senior year.
I can remember when I played for you. You talked about some games playing against Marshall Faulk during your time at Hawaii. Was he a pretty special player to play against?
Well, he was. I mean, I never, you know, we played San Diego State, and this was in 1991. And, yeah, he was playing. And, yeah, he was really, you know, everyone knew, got to watch out for that guy, Marshall Faulk. And he pretty much tore it up against us that day. We lost 47-21. But I guess the most positive part of that game was there's an Aussie guy sitting in the stand, and he started playing American football after that. He was over there on a business trip and decided to go and watch the University of Hawaii play. And 10 years later, he told me how he saw that game, and that convinced him to come back to Australia and start playing American football.
Tell me about the coaching staff at Hawaii, because this starts to get where your connection with Adam here, Paul Johnson being on the staff.
Yeah, Paul Johnson was our offensive coordinator when I was playing at Hawaii. And also one of his assistant coaches, Mike Seawalk, was also my offensive line coach. And so I've kept in touch with Mike Seawalk over the years. And then when Adam came along, Mike contacted me one day and he said, look, you got any guys down in Australia? And I said, yeah, I've got this guy who I think can play. And I put Adam in contact with Mike. And then, you know, I got some film, and I sent them some film of Adam to Mike. And he liked the film. And, you know, I guess with my recommendation as well, I felt like Adam was an adaptable kind of player, but he could take coaching well, had a great work ethic and great attitude and character. So they decided to invite Adam over for a recruiting trip, you know, to Georgia Tech, and basically offered him on the spot a scholarship.
Tell me about how you discovered Adam, first of all.
Well, Adam discovered me.
Okay.
I've still got a Facebook message here from him many moons ago saying, hey, Paul, I guess with me playing overseas at Hawaii myself, a lot of people have contacted me in the past and say, you know, hey, coach, how do I get to America? What do I need to do? And, you know, what's the process involved? Because a lot of people didn't understand that, you know, because it's a huge step. You know, a lot of people don't know about the NCAA academic requirements. A lot of people don't know, you know, how to really, you know, pursue it properly. So basically what I do is provide people with advice. But in the case of Adam, yeah, he contacted me. And then, so what I did was I got him involved in, he's still a young guy, he's probably 15 years of age. And I got him involved in a game called the Down Under Bowl, where I got to watch him play and coach him as well. And then from there, I just started providing him with advice. Then he would fly up to Sydney every now and then, and I'd do some coaching with him. But, you know, we got him, you know, we gave him the right advice on what to do in the weight room. And then from there, you know, and I've still got this post from him here. It's the 8th of April, 2009. It says, hey, Paul, I play in the same junior gridiron team as Rory Drew, and he was telling me about how you can help players along with their journey to try and make college or NFL. I was wondering if we could keep in touch and you could give me some advice on where to look or go to have the best shot at making it. Cheers, Adam. So he reached out to me way back then, you know, so basically we built this relationship up, and then I got to meet his mum. And she came up to Sydney as well. And, well, I basically just mentored him and gave him the right advice. And then I put him in touch with the University of Hawaii as well. But it was Georgia Tech that really pursued him hard. And then he ended up taking a recruiting trip there and signing a scholarship.
And this is what you kind of do now at Bring It On Sports. Can you tell us about the services you offer and other players you work with?
Yeah, well, look, you know, at Bring It On Sports, we've worked with a bunch of guys. There's another player at Baylor by the name of Blake Muir. He didn't get invited to the combine, but he for the last 2 years, he was a starting left guard for Baylor. And, you know, I would not be surprised if he got drafted as well. So that's, yeah, but so he's another guy that I've worked with, and it's mainly providing the guys with the right advice. Like, I'm not a strength and conditioning coach. I'm a football coach. But I provide the guys with the right advice, and, you know, and then we meet up and we do technique sessions from time to time. Like, there was another guy, his name's Geordie Stalker, and he's at Gardner Webb University in, I think, North Carolina, which is a 1AA school. And I didn't get him the scholarship, but he came to me for one-on-one coaching, and, you know, we'd meet to have 2-hour sessions where I'd just go over O-line stuff with him, you know, starting off with his stance and getting into initial movement, teaching him how to move efficiently, because to me the most important thing about offensive line is getting from point A to point B efficiently and effectively. You know, you can be big, but if you can't move, then you're no good to anyone. You know, so to me, I worked really a lot on his movement, moving from point A to point B, and obviously having good pad level in the process, and then just getting his mind right so that when he played the game, he didn't worry about anything else except on what he had to do. And you could really see the film and you know, on how he's, you know, how he got better. And he's been probably starting at, as getting playing time as a starter at Gardner Webb for the last 2 years now, and he's going into his senior year this year. There's another guy, Adrian Thomas, who's went to the University of Washington. He's now graduated in 2010. There's one now that I've just put into a junior college last year. He hadn't played any American football. He's 6'7", weighed 270 pounds, around a 4'8" and 40, has about 5% body fat. Can bench press 225 pounds 28 times, and you know, he's already getting a lot of attention down there in at Arizona Western. There was a guy this year we put into the University of Hawaii by the name of Max Hendry, a rugby player, and he's, you know, 6'4", weighs 245 pounds. I timed him in the 40, ran a 4.53 in the 40-yard dash. Just a hell of an athlete, and he's probably going to be a defensive end for the University of Hawaii. And they're coming down to Australia this year to play, actually, against the University of California in August. So that's going to be great. But look, it's been a really, you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's a really easy journey. You know, back in the year 2000, we were paying for coaches to come out from the University of Hawaii to recruit in Australia. And then from there, now that we've been able to get a few guys over to America, now the University of Hawaii pays their own way to come out to Australia to do recruiting. So it's kind of like, if you build it, they will come, right? And so I think any time, you know, you can do something and have some success, then people realize, well, hang on, there's hope here. More people get behind it. More people get, you know, you got more kids in Australia now trying to get overseas. But that also, you know, creates hope at the other end in the USA, where now you've got, you know, University of Hawaii coming out here to recruit. They're also coming out here to play a competition game against California, and, you know, California is interested in recruiting. Then, you know, on top of that, there's the whole Jared Hayne thing, you know, a rugby player who made it with the 49ers last year. So that's also built up some momentum. And I really feel that Australia can become you know, a top recruiting ground for colleges overseas,
yeah,
in the USA.
You know, there's been a lot of punters that have made it from Australia to the NFL, but, you know, I think a lot of players at other positions are represented at, you know, it looks like it's becoming more and more common at the college level, but still haven't cracked the NFL. So, I mean, if Adam makes it, what would that mean to football in Australia?
Well, it meant a lot because, you know, he's homegrown talent, and, you know, he played for the Australian national team, you know, and it would mean a lot. And Adam being the kind of guy that he is, we all know that he's going to be the kind of guy that's going to give back to the sport over here. It's evident in, you know, just when you meet the guy, he's very down to earth and he's got a lot of character. So it would mean a lot for Australian football to have someone like Adam make it in the NFL.
As Adam prepares to enter the NFL draft, do you think he has what it takes to make it in professional football from what you've seen from him?
Mentally, I think he has what it takes, 100%.
How about physically?
Physically, he's, you know, look, the obvious is he's a little light. You know, he's probably about 6'5", 290 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, like when I look at Adam, he's got 6% body fat. You know, so you take a guy who's 290 pounds and he's got 6% body fat versus a guy who's 310 pounds with 20% body fat. You know what I mean? To me, he's got the same muscle mass as those big guys. You know, I think one of the things with Adam, but is Adam can stay low. He's got a pretty good nervous system. And I think he adapts well to coaching. He's pretty smart as well. So, you know, it'll be one of those things, I guess. You know, he's got to use his strengths to the best of his ability, you know. And so, I mean, heck, I played, first time I started at Hawaii, I weighed 245 pounds as an offensive tackle. You know, back then, you know, the ends were 270, 280. So I was undersized. But so, you know, you just got to find a way to use your strengths to the best of your ability. And I think for Adam, if he can stay low and have excellent pad level, and fight pressure staying low without standing up to look for the running back, he'll be okay.
I'm kind of curious, taking this in another direction here, just about your coaching experience, because after you played, you got into coaching, you were my coach, but I remember you also coached in Japan. Just tell me about the game internationally, because I think in America that there's a lack of knowledge about the game outside the borders of the country.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, I got involved in coaching after I finished playing at Hawaii. My last semester at Hawaii, I went and coached spring football at the University of Hawaii. And so I was working with guys like Kenny Niumatalolo, who's now the head coach at Navy. I sat in all the quarterback meetings with Coach Paul Johnson. But then I went and worked with the O-line with Mike Seawalk and Kenny, and that's where my coaching career began. And then I came back to Australia and started coaching, still playing, but also was a player coach in Australia for a number of years, coached on the national team. And then I went over to Japan in 1999. A former teammate of mine at Hawaii, David Stamp, was coaching the recruits Seagulls. So I coached there for a year. Then I came back to Australia and became the national team head coach there for a while and coached on the national team. But since 1999, international football started. We had our first World Cup for the International Federation of American Football. American football is now played in approximately 70 countries around the world. They're playing in India. They're playing in, obviously, Australia, but they're also playing in New Zealand, American Samoa. They're playing in Tahiti. They're starting to play in Tonga. They're also starting to play in what we call Western Samoa, which is now known as just Samoa. And they're starting up there. They're playing in all over Europe, in Germany, Austria, France, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Norway, Spain, Italy. Where else? They're playing all over Africa now. They've started playing in Africa. They're playing in Egypt, Morocco. they're playing in the Middle East. They're also playing all in South America. So they're playing in Brazil, Chile. Where else? There's so many countries I can't even think of them all. Japan, Korea.
It's amazing.
It's playing amazing. In China, like the Junior World Cup this year is in China. And the Australian national team, we're traveling to Tahiti this year. So the World Cup last year was for the men's team was in Ohio in Canton. There's also women's tackle football played in Australia. And the Women's World Cup is next year in 2017. So the sport has really, really kicked off. There's people who have started playing in Germany who are now playing in the NFL. And there's a guy this year who was played for France at the World Cup last year, and he's been drafted to the Giants. And he never played any college football, to my knowledge. He's just playing in France. So for guys to make it who haven't played college football is amazing. because you know as well as I do, about 99% of people who play in the NFL all come through the college system. So in saying that, we're also starting to get kids who are playing high school football in the USA, because if any of them are ever going to make it as a quarterback, they need to play high school football in the USA. Well, that's from Australia at least. So mm-hmm. there's lots of things going on. It's kind of like that domino effect. You know, you hit one domino, it somehow it affects a domino, and, you know, it's like the 6 degrees of separation for football, if you know what I mean.
But before we let you go, I think our listeners might get a kick out of what do you remember about me as a football player?
You? Oh, man. I don't know. You, when you got angry, you just reminded me of Adam Sandler when he got angry in like the movie Wedding Singer.
or the football movie with Adam Sandler. He plays...
Billy Boucher.
Yeah.
Water Boy. Well, you're better than the Water Boy. Actually, and you're better than the towel boy too, who they put in. He didn't last too long. I think they threw him a slant pass and he got clocked by an inside linebacker. So he didn't last very much at all. But look, it's been a great journey, and look, I really wish, you know, Adam the best of luck, and the thing is with him, I just think he's a really adaptable guy, and I think he'll work hard. I mean, when we sent him to Georgia Tech, they did not redshirt him. You know, and I thought that was pretty amazing, but he didn't even get redshirted, but he was able to go out there and play straight away. And I was kind of expecting him to at least get redshirted in his first year and then come back and then play for 4 years, but they didn't do that. So it'll be really interesting to see... it really depends on the team he goes to and what their needs are. It only takes one guy to like him. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, Paul, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me today. Appreciate it very much, and wish you all the best at Bring It On Sports.
Thank you very much, Brian. Take care, and let's wish Adam the best of luck. Australia's behind him.
Sounds good. Thanks to Paul Manera for taking some time to talk to us. Check out his website at bringitonsports.com.au. And good luck to Adam Gotsis in this weekend's NFL draft. We're rooting for you, Adam. And that kind of leads us into our next segment here.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, kind of the biggest news, I think, was... published in a report by Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I don't know if it was published last night or early this morning, but he's got the definitive list of players making pre-draft visits to Green Bay. Bob McGinn does this every year, and while a few reports will leak here and there throughout the process, Bob somehow has some connection that allows him to find out the majority of them. You know, every NFL team is allowed to bring in 30 players for pre-draft visits, and no more than 30. And the Packers spend a lot of them on guys that they will sign after the NFL draft, kind of almost a little bit of recruiting. So, you know, when the draft is over, players can sign with whoever they want. But I think the Packers really take this opportunity to say, hey, look at our facilities. Why don't you come play here? And a lot of the players on this list will end up signing with the Packers. Not all of them, but some of them. And just to bridge today's total conversation, perhaps most interestingly to, at least as it pertains to this episode, you heard Paul Manera talk about him just a few minutes ago. The Packers actually brought in Blake Muir, from Australia, played his college football at Baylor, actually transferred from Hawaii to Baylor. He's an offensive lineman. He was a first-team All-Big 12 selection. So there you go. Perhaps an Aussie going to be on the Packers roster if the Packers draft him or sign him as a free agent. Whatever happens, But there's a decent possibility. If a guy's listed on here on this list, there's a good possibility he'll end up in Green Bay. Not all of them will, but definitely some of them will. And you can go check this article out. It's published at JS Online, but just a few of the notable names on this list, guys who probably might get drafted actually. So Packers may or may not have a chance at these guys, but some of the big names here, perhaps the most interesting one, was Texas Tech tackle LaRaven Clark. Packers brought him in. He could go as, some people have talked about him as late as round one. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but, you know, very likely a day two pick. You know, if the Packers looking to add depth at tackle, he could be a target if he lasts all the way to, you know, the end of round two for them. So just interesting there. But some other names, defensive end Bronson Kafusi from BYU. I published an article about him at 24/7 Sports. Had talked to former Packers linebacker Brady Papinga about him, who knows Kafusi really well. A couple other players who were invited to the NFL Combine: Nebraska tackle Alex Lewis, wide receiver Bryce Treggs from Cal, University of California. So another guy, certainly a lot of Packers connections there between Aaron Rodgers and Richard Rodgers. Cornerback Kalen Reed from Southern Mississippi. Offensive lineman Ted Karras from Illinois. These are just some of the notable names on this list. And a few more you've probably haven't heard of that are, you know, more your prototypical undrafted free agents, guys flying under the radar a little bit. So go check that out. It's published at jsonline.com. But, you know, since our last episode of Railroad Central, other Packers news, Green Bay has released defensive end Ray Drew, and he probably only lasted a month with the team and, you know, really didn't get much of a chance. But this was probably a situation, if you're looking as to why the Packers released him now, I mean, without getting that chance, basically. The off-season program, strength and conditioning program, started a week ago. So he got a week into that, and the Packers probably saw, you know, he just didn't have what it takes to, you know, make their roster at least. Whether he latches on somewhere else in the NFL remains to be seen. But Packers open up a roster spot, at least something, someone they'll fill with, you know, probably a rookie this upcoming weekend by the time they, you know, get through the whole process of signing undrafted players and things like that. And also just one more notable thing, not necessarily Packers related anymore, but former Packers linebacker AJ Hawk was just released yesterday by the Cincinnati Bengals. This is the organization's all-time leading tackler. He, of course, was released by the Packers last year and spent one season in Cincinnati. And does this spell the end of A.J. Hawk's professional football playing career? If it is, it's been quite a run. He perhaps didn't quite live up to the billing of the number 5 overall draft choice, but still, considering he's the organization's all-time leading tackler, won a Super Bowl ring, and was a longtime starter on the Packers defense, he was a contributing member of that team and a very worthy one, even if, you know, some people can't get over the fact that maybe he probably didn't deserve to be the number 5 overall draft choice, but still a longtime contributing member of a defense that won a Super Bowl in Green Bay. So we'll see what happens to A.J. Hawk if he latches on somewhere else. I find it hard to believe it would be in Green Bay unless there are several injuries that take place between now and training camp. And let's knock on wood that doesn't happen. But that's been the Packers news in the past 48 hours, leading us to
the day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, in the next 24-hour period, the NFL draft starts on Thursday. So only the first round, all 31 picks. Of course, only 31 because the New England Patriots' first-round draft choice was forfeited, part of the whole Deflategate, which is now has new life into it. The courts getting involved with Tom Brady's suspension. Very interesting how that's playing out, but that's elsewhere in the NFL. As far as the Packers go, by the end of Thursday night, the Packers could have the newest member of the team in green and gold, assuming they don't trade out of the first round, which I think is actually a possibility. Get a few more picks in rounds 2, 3, 4, things like that. We'll see whether that comes to fruition or not. But regardless, over the course of the weekend, they're going to add lots of new names to this roster. So we're almost there, folks. One more day away. So we're looking forward to it. Our next episode of Railbird Central will be back on air on Friday. I've already got our guest lined up. Tim Van Voren of Fox 6 in Milwaukee covers the Green Bay Packers. We're going to be talking to him. He's going to be up in Green Bay at draft headquarters covering the proceedings Thursday night. So we'll hear from him, and we'll talk to him Friday morning. So looking forward to that as the draft gets underway. So, and we'll be talking about the new Packers first-round draft pick, if indeed they select a player and don't trade down. But we'll see you, folks. Have a good Wednesday. We'll talk to you again on Friday as the NFL draft ramps up. We'll see you later. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you could do us a solid, go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. And give us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. Helps us get word out about the show. We'll see you, folks. I leave you today with a song called All Inside by Kyle Hollingsworth on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack, go.